right, welcome back to No Country for Us. I'm Gabriel Lobato, and today I'm joined by none other than Mr. Crow, teacher here at FHN, teaches AP government.
Yeah, good afternoon, Gabe.
All right, so today, well, actually, I should start like this. A couple, I would say like about a week ago, the assassination of an Iranian general. I don't really know how to pronounce his name.
It's been a while.
His name is so complicated. But anyways, he got assassinated, and online a lot of people are, you know, joking about the World War III, and that got me thinking, what's a better topic than the draft?
Oh,
yes. So the Selective Service, the first peacetime draft started in 1940, September 16th, which required men between the ages of 21 and 45 to register for the draft. And so I was thinking that, you know, since it really got taken down in the 70s, correct?
The last time they've actually used the draft was in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I think that ended in 73, 74, something like that.
Right, when they stopped requiring men to sign up for it.
No, they still sign up for it. By law, you're supposed to still sign for it, but they haven't instituted it since that point
in time. Right, like they haven't called men to,
right,
to fight.
To serve. No, I remember signing up for it. It was weird.
Like the actual, like, when you turn 18, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So what I've noticed, though, is that baby boomers and the silent generation, everybody before the baby boomers, were really the only ones that were, like, affected by, you know, getting called to war. And so I thought that's kind of created, like, different attitudes between the two generations. I feel like, would you say that, like, the older generations are more a little bit more apathetic towards it? Newer generations?
I think the older generations, they felt the need for it. They grew up in a very different time period.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about my parents' age, because I remember, really? My dad telling me stories about he had draft numbers and that kind of thing. And my dad's about 20 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So when the draft ended, I was 8 or 9.
Eight or nine?
I don't remember anything specifically about it, but I was like, see, if it was 74, I would have been about 8. Yeah. So, are they more apathetic towards it? I mean, I think they understand a need for it now. I think it's that people don't see a need for it because we're living in a different time. Back then it was communism. It was after World War II. It was Vietnam War. It was Korea War. Our situation's, I think, a lot different.
Right. So I remember you mentioned this to me when we were discussing doing the podcast in your class, and you said there would be no need for it ever again.
Not ever again. But at this point in time, I remember when it was, but a couple of years ago, they started talking about maybe reinstituting the draft, and there was some situation they brought up. And I remember in Congress, they were actually talking about it, and they talked about not needing the draft. And we have enough of the volunteer army, and the type of warfare that's out there now, it's much more reactive. It's much more intense, fast, as opposed to, you know, going back to World War II and that kind of thing. Now, I think if something big like that would break out, games would change, but nowadays it's everything is much more terroristic, quick, and that kind of thing.
Right. So, do you think also part of that is, do you think like maybe patriotism or national pride has increased? Because we see a lot more people just joining voluntarily than back then.
I don't know if it's increased or not, but I think it's perceived differently. Because after the 60s and 70s, there was a really big rift between the government. And rightly so. I mean, there was Vietnam was over, civil rights movement was going on, Watergate was going on. But after 9/11, I think there was another big push towards patriotism. Is it bigger than it was before? I don't know if I would say there it's bigger, but I think there's just a different understanding or need for it. And with the type of warfare, the type of persons they're looking for, it's significantly different. So
like, warfare now has definitely, I think, become more specialized.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and, like, was it Ben Ludwig and, God, I'm forgetting his name. They came in to talk to us about, you know, and not enlisting, but joining the Mizzou.
The ROTC program.
Yeah, right, and it's all about, like, they value, actually, a college education now.
Right, to my understanding, to be an officer, you have to be a college graduate.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you go through the academies or you go through after college, go through OCS or go through ROTC, you have to have a college degree to be an officer. Now, to be an enlisted, you have to have a high school degree. But there are so many different things now that you do, and actually going out and being a grunt, if you will. Mm-hmm. You need those, yes, but to the extent that you did before, no, I don't think so. You've got so many more electronics and ballistics and weaponry and drones and that kind of thing.
Right.
I think it's much different.
Yeah, so they're looking for more, like...
Well, and you think about, what are we doing now? I was watching just something the other night about the F-35 fighter and some of the things that it can do are the technology involved. You've got to understand how that works, or you've got to understand how the computer aspects of things work. Everything's electronic, with the exception of maybe some of your most simple weaponry. It's all electronic. So
yeah, like, so it's, I guess, the need for more people, per se, is becoming less.
Probably right now, yes.
So in what event would we actually need, like, a draft or, like, to reinstitute the use of it?
Well, I would think if you would get into something like maybe a war where China would get involved.
Right.
You look at the military of China, it's hundreds of thousands of people strong. I mean, they've got a billion people to pull from. Well, we've got 300,000. So do we need that... do we need that standing manpower? No, we don't need it right now. But if we got to that situation, maybe we would need to build that number of forces. So
right. So, you know, you obviously pay attention to the news a lot. So why is it that assassinating that general would not spark a world war?
Well, I don't know all the details involved and what was going on with that.
Right.
Secondly, the situation between Iran and the United States for years has been very hostile. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, does Iran want to get involved in a military confrontation with us? They have a very unstable government as it is. I don't think that economically speaking, they are not in the situation we are in right now. So they don't want to really escalate it beyond what they did. In fact, their reaction was to bomb one of our bases in a foreign country. They'd even bomb our homeland. No one was killed or seriously injured in that. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, we had forewarning of that. So it was kind of like, hey, we can do this if we want to, but we just want to let you know we can do this. And it's somewhat of a retaliatory strike.
Okay.
Where do we want to get involved in a military confrontation? We're involved already in the Middle East. We're involved in Afghanistan. We've got bases all over the world. We've got North Korea to take a look at and watch.
Right.
Do we need to spread ourselves and get ourselves involved in something else? No.
Right, okay. So kind of going back to, you mentioned earlier that your father told you stories. Back then, was the draft something to be feared?
If you were in
the I mean, it seems like an obvious answer, but was that something that was, like, on everybody's minds during wartime?
I would think yes, in this sense. Because I have, and again, I'm hearing stories from people my father's age. Mm-hmm. If you left college, they would send your name to the draft board right away, because how they did things is they classified you. So if you were not in college or you weren't married or something along those lines, you were classified a certain way, which means you were the first taken. Mm-hmm. So the biggest problem with the draft was very often the people who were taken were lower income persons, many different kind of minorities, because they couldn't afford college or that kind of thing, and they were immediately put right into the service. Secondly, if you knew it or you could get into college or you could get into, say, a National Guard situation to avoid being drafted into the Army, you did that as a way of getting around it. I mean, George W. Bush did that. He was in the Texas National Guard, I believe. So there are ways around it if you knew about it or had access to it. So,
right.
In my dad's case, he had his draft number, and he got married very young. Mm-hmm. And right about the time they were starting to pull draft numbers, he got married.
Mm-hmm.
So it reclassified him because he had already taken his physical, knowing that he potentially could be drafted, or it was scheduled to be taken at this point in time. I don't know, but when he got married, he got reclassified, and then he went to college and was reclassified in a different situation. So he never did serve in Vietnam.
Right. Okay. So so some people definitely use this almost to their advantage because they couldn't afford things. And so it was, like, almost embraced in some sense.
Yes, but that's nothing new in the history of the military. You go back to the Civil War.
Even now, we still have benefits for joining the...
But if you go back to the Civil War, wealthy people would often pay somebody to go fight for them. Mm-hmm. Or in the case of you know, Southern plantation owners, they'd send their slaves in their place.
Right. I'm assuming that's illegal now.
Yes,
it is. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
No, if your number's called, you're going. So.
Yeah. My grandpa, he told me that he never got enlisted to go, which was, I don't know, like, when I talk to a lot of people that age, it's weird because I actually don't meet a lot of people my grandfather's age that it actually were drafted. And I'm like, does that mean, like, sometimes the numbers don't quite make sense to me. Like, I feel like, I mean, obviously there's less and less veterans now that we're meeting. But, I mean, I feel like people my grandpa's age, I'd still meet more people that actually served in the military. And I feel like I'm not seeing that as much anymore.
I don't think you're mistaken. A lot of Vietnam vets, though, don't like to talk about their service.
Exactly. Right.
It wasn't well received. They came home and they weren't respected the way that the service persons are now. Mm-hmm. Or if people find out they're Vietnam vets, they react differently now. Mm-hmm. So it was just a different time, and it really left a bad taste in the mouths, especially the servicemen, because they were drafted to go over and do their job. They may not have wanted to do it, and they come home and they're being criticized. So they're kind of in a catch-22. What are they supposed to do? And they come home and they're spat upon and yelled at. And
yeah, they had no choice.
Right. So
so they're caught in kind of horrible situation.
Right. And as I said, most of the people who were taken at that point in time were generally lower-income persons, minorities. So I would imagine your grandfather is probably not real close friends with a lot of people who are like that, unless they go back to the VFW or something like that.
Right, no, he's not.
And yeah, and they say that if, you know, I laugh because I've been watching a show, most of the World War II veterans now are past 90 years of age and passing away.
Right.
Korean vets are probably in their 80s, mm-hmm. late 80s. So you're talking about Vietnam vets in your 60s and your 70s.
Right. So my next thought is, I feel like, I see this everywhere. This might be like a stereotypical thing, but there's like this assumption, I feel like, where the older generation feels like the younger generation is too soft. And is that in any part due to the older generation's experience with the draft?
I don't necessarily think it's the older generation's experience with the draft. I think it's just the way we were brought up.
Right.
There's a lot of things that... And even my generation, which was a year... the generation beyond the draft, things that we did when we were kids, the way we grew up, it was a lot more defined. You did this, you did this, you don't question this, you don't question this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just to some degree a perception. Are we softer than that? I would probably have to say to some degree, yes.
Right.
But could that change? I mean, when World War II broke out, our numbers in the military were very, very low, and we ramped up real quick and became the fighting force that we were. So I think that would change if we needed to.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, compared to maybe some countries, we're not as, I guess.
Right.
You know, I don't know, rugged do is the word you
Do other countries have, like, an active enlistment? Korea and... South Korea, I know, has an active...
Oh, a lot of other countries have some things. For example, Switzerland. Mm-hmm. You have to serve so many years.
Right.
Once you're at a certain age. So I was just watching something last week. It was a hockey game. And one of the hockey players who comes in from Switzerland, he's going back in the summer and serving his tour. I knew... I think Austria has... once you turn 18, you get to serve a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a kid who was here. He didn't want to go back to Austria because he said, if I go back to Austria, I'm going to have to join the military. So a lot of countries have a required amount of service they have to do in the military. And then once you're out, you're already trained, you have weapons, you're trained to defend. Israel's another country. A men and women both have to serve and do some kinds of service to some degree in the military. So there's a number of countries that,
right.
Do. I know of a couple, but not all of them.
So the draft in particular. So if you were drafted back in, like, let's say, like, in Vietnam, did that necessarily mean that you were actually going to go fight, or could it be a number of jobs?
Probably, yes, you were. Because what they were looking for and needing for at that time were frontline positions. They needed just more manpower, unless you had some specialty service that maybe they'd put you in. But I would imagine... From what I understand, if you were drafted and trained, most of the time you'd be heading off. That's what they needed.
All right. Well, I think we're about done. That cool. was a thank you for joining.
Hopefully it was what you were wanting. So
No, that was perfect. Yeah. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the podcast.
Been fun.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for joining us on No Country for Us. Hope to see you next time, and goodbye.